Call the Computer Center.
This portion of Your Talk Show is brought to you by Mercy Health, a passion for making lives better.
Your community, your opinions, your forum. This is Your Talk Show on WCLO. Opinions expressed on Your Talk Show are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of WCLO or Big Radio staff, management, or sponsors. The open phone and text line number is 608-752-4000. Now, here's the host of Your Talk Show, Tim Bremmel.
So I'm just dealing with it. Good morning. Welcome. Monday. Did any of you undertake the advice of our computer guy, James Pearson, on Friday? I did too. Starting to change all my passwords. Now I'm in the middle of that and things work in some places and not others. Like here! But we'll muddle through nonetheless. Welcome to the program, game. It's not the end of the world. I can't get into my Facebook account. Part of me is gratified by that. Yay! Can't get into that today. Don't need to read all the tripe and nonsense that I see there. But in any case, welcome in where we are going to look past that to some other issues this morning. In just a moment or two, do we have Christian on the phone yet or not yet?
He is not yet.
Okay. All right.
I think he's going to call in about
Christian Schneider, journalist, is going to be joining us. And he is he worked in the state legislature for a number of years. He's got a master's from Marquette in political science. And he currently writes columns for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and a place called The Dispatch online, thedispatch.com. And he's done some investigation into how a mechanism on many campuses, including the UW-Madison campus work, things called, what do we want to call this thing, Tom? Bias reporting, bias?
Yeah, bias response team.
The bias response team, yeah. Okay, so there's a number of institutions that have instituted these things. And they're supposed to then, you know, positively resolve these complaints. But is it doing what it's supposed to do? For instance, in his column, he puts out a number of these examples. And you have to wonder, you know, when a clash of ethnicity occurs, and not clash necessarily, but a misunderstanding. Remember Roger Axtell? He wrote all those books on all these different cultures as you travel to them and what was acceptable and not acceptable. Ken Reggetz, when he was doing the show, used to have Roger on all the time. That is right, Roger. Yeah. And it would be things like, you know what, here we just automatically extend our hand for a handshake when you're greeting somebody, right? But in certain cultures, that's offensive. But if you don't know that, should you then be able to have the dogs called on you, basically, and say that you are a hateful person because you're ignorant of that fact? And that's what's coming up here to a degree, I think. One of the examples that Christian cites in the article, and we'll talk more about this with him in moments. When students settled to his sociology class at UW-Madison in 2018, the professor started describing certain theories he was eager to critique. And the professor also added some theories that couldn't be critiqued. He called them sacred cows from within academia. The statement angered one student who complained to the university administrators that the use of the term sacred cows was inappropriate because in some cultures, cows are deemed to be sacred. Okay, get it. But how many of us have just used that term in a nonchalant manner, never thinking about it. You know, and if people are going to become offended, maybe rightfully so sometimes, maybe they're a little too sensitive sometimes, but how does the university deal with it? And Christian's done a lot of look into that. So we'll take a quick break here, and we will come back with Christian Schneider on your talk show on WCLO.
When everyday activities become painful, it's time to turn to the trusted team at the Mercy Health Orthopedic Institute. Our specialists provide the very best care for your joints, muscles, and bones, and are experts in treating fractures, sprains, strains, and arthritis. We also offer the latest techniques in advanced joint replacement. From diagnosis to treatment, our orthopedic team will help alleviate your pain so you can lead an active, pain-free life. Mercy Health, a passion for making lives better.
Love is in the air. Hi, this is Jordan from K&W Greenery. This Friday is Valentine's Day. It's time to remember those we love. Wife, husband, mom or dad, kids and grandkids. At K&W, we can help with the big and the little I love yous. Fabulous flowering plants, baskets of blooms, amazing orchids, and gorgeous garden decor. If you're not sure, a K&W gift card always says I love you. Happy Valentine's Day from your friends at K&W Greenery. Highway 14, Janesville.
Refresh and renew your bathroom with big savings from Menards. Add stylish elegance to your bathroom with vanities from Magic Woods Elements. The 36-inch wide Stratton vanity features a trendy gray finish with one door and two drawers that all have soft close hinges and slides for smooth and quiet operation. Just $229.99 now at Menards. Sale prices good through Saturday, February 22nd.
Save big money at Menards.
While the coffee's brewing, so is Southern Wisconsin's morning news.
Right now.
On WCLO, Janesville, Beloit.
My life has been a tapestry of rich and royal hue, an everlasting vision of the air.
Released this day, hey?
1971. I actually bought the album.
I bought the one after this.
Is that the one with Jazzman mm-hmm. on it? Yeah.
Yeah. This has never been my favorite song for whatever reason. I don't know. It was a big song. But I like up-tempo stuff. That's part of my issue. If it's slower, it immediately is like, ah.
Well, I didn't want to play Smackwater Jack leading up to a guest.
Probably fair. All right. Our first guest this morning on the big program, ladies and gentlemen, is a author, column writer. He holds a master's, as we said, from Marquette University in political science, worked in the Wisconsin State Legislature for a while, and his 2005 WisOpinion.com blog was awarded Blog of the Year back in 2005. So, Christian Schneider, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Well, this is interesting reporting that you have just put out. That comes from now your kind of online home here. And tell us a little bit about the site you're writing for, first of all.
I write for a number of places. My main gig is with a place called The College Fix, and we write about campus issues, things like that. And that's kind of where I got onto this this topic of bias response teams. But in this case, I was writing for The Dispatch, which is a new website created by Jonah Goldberg and Stephen Hayes, a Wisconsin guy. And, they both come from kind of powerhouse websites in the past, and they've reconstituted in a new place. And so this is kind of kicking off their first month. And so I wrote for The Dispatch.
Well, it's an interesting article, and, again, most of us that are extremely out of touch with the university systems these days don't know about a lot of the mechanisms that are in place these days, but your article indicates that back really 3 years ago, there were already more than 200 schools with bias response teams, so it's probably closer to 500 by now, I'm guessing, just based on the climate out there, and... I want to read this before you go into what you found, Christian, because I was fascinated by one of the longest, and I'm not being critical when I call it this, by the way, to your writing, longest run-on sentences that I've seen in a long time. However, you're just quoting the policy from the school.
Right.
So here it is, gang. If you're wondering what bias is, and Christian, this is according to UW-Madison, right?
Yep.
Bias comprises, quote, single or multiple acts toward an individual, group, or their property that are so severe, pervasive, and objectionably offensive that they create an unreasonably intimidating, hostile, or offensive work, learning, or program environment, and that one could reasonably conclude are based upon actual or perceived age, race, color, creed, religion, gender identity, or expression, ethnicity, national origin, disability, veteran status, sexual orientation, political affiliation, marital status, spirituality, cultural, socioeconomic status, or any combination of these or other related factors.
That is exactly why I included the whole thing, because I think people needed to get an idea of just exactly how all-encompassing the reporting process is, and what the university considers to be biased.
Am I incorrect here, Christian, then, in basically saying that basically probably when you went through and looked at this, this basically means that anybody can file a bias complaint against anybody for anything?
Well, that is the case, and that's the entire rest of the article is pointing out that, like, literally pretty much anything anybody finds offensive can be reported. If you see later in the piece, I quote the University of Michigan's policy that basically says, you know, your own feelings are basically the standard. So yeah, I think that's what that long quote really says.
So, as it relates, I know you focused on UW-Madison, so we'll kind of stay within that context, and it's probably best for us since that's right up the street from us anyway. But are officials at UW-Madison, according to your article, 107 complaints were filed in the 2018-19 school year. So they have to deal with all these, obviously, if they come in. They've had to create, I assume, a committee or some sort of mechanism to deal with the complaints as they come in. What are people saying to these, I'll call them students, because I'm assuming most of the complaints are filed by students, when they get something on the order of, I mentioned the first example you cited where, you know, I can't tell you how many times I use the word sacred cow when I'm talking about something in this company that we can't touch. And all of us, I think, would be familiar with that. I would have no idea that someone would deem that offensive. Now, maybe I'm just being ignorant that there isn't a culture where that would be offensive, but how can I be reported for something that I didn't even know? It would be like me breaking a law I didn't know. You can say, well, you ought to be aware of it, but how are you? Can you be aware of hundreds of different cultures?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's why I mentioned, you know, back in the 80s, back when, you know, prior to my time in college, but not that much, you know, we had speech codes. We had a famous Donna Shalala speech code at the UW-Madison where it was actually spelled out kind of what you could or could not say. Now, it was still unconstitutional, and it was still, you know, prior restraint on speech, but at least it was sort of spelled out what you could or couldn't say. In this instance, and I say this, the school is basically just crowdsourcing enforcement of a language policy, and the problem is you don't even know what the policy is. The policy is just kind of what other people find offensive, you know, kind of what they deem to be insensitive. And so it really could be anything. And, yeah, I mean, it's basically just taking students and turn them into informers on one another. So you kind of have this system set up where it's everybody against everybody.
Well, and I always think in many cases like this, there are kind of two sides to the argument. And so I was referring to a local resident here who was, and I may start getting my facts wrong now because it was before my time on the show, but a gentleman by the name of Roger Axtell. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He authored many books. He has since passed on largely travel, but in the context of, hey, if you're going to travel to this country, here are their customs, here are the things that you need to know, and these are the things that you could get tripped up on. And I said earlier, the example might be that, you know, around here, if someone goes, hey, Tim, I'd like to introduce you to my new friend, Bill, I'd go, oh, hi, Bill, and I'd extend my hand for a handshake. But there are some cultures where that is considered rude. And so, okay, I could walk into it inadvertently if I hadn't read the book and I didn't know. By the same token, isn't there a responsibility to say, well, if you're in the country where you know that this is the majority of people are going to do this, why would you then be offended because you know they're just ignorant to your own country's customs? I'm not sure why we have the guilt always being assigned to the majority from the minority, if I'm kind of characterizing that right. And that's what the article looks like. In a group setting, one student gets upset about something that the other majority of the students do not, but they're the one that gets to invoke this procedure and then ultimately have the response team do whatever it is they do. Is that correct?
Right. That's exactly what it is. It could just be, you know, one thing that one student finds offensive, and you know, they report it, and then you know, either the professor gets a talking to or gets a letter put in their file. I don't think that's actually the case at UW-Madison. I think they have. I'm not quite sure what their process is, but yeah, I mean, it's basically all in the mind of the listener, and so it's impossible for people to tell, you know, what the customs are. I mean, and what we're seeing on campuses, and I've been doing this for a lot of campuses all over America, is that students are just afraid to say anything anymore. They just won't speak, and you know, that's a prior restraint on free speech. It's speech that normally would be protected under the First Amendment now isn't able to be said out loud because of the presence of these systems where, you know, you might get reported for something that is completely innocuous.
Well, I'm not sure I understand the goal. Did anybody you talked to at UW give you a reason for why these mechanisms have been installed at all these schools across the country?
They didn't address that specifically, but I would suspect that a lot of these schools are just putting them in, you know, to try to avoid lawsuits. You know, if something does happen on campus, they say at least, well, we had this reporting system. But again, I think you know, I think they're in some legal trouble with regards to shutting down free speech. You know, you have students that are afraid to say certain things on campus, and you know, there's the whole idea is if there's any place that you should be able to say something without fear of repercussions, it should be a college campus where, you know, the Wisconsin idea, sifting and winnowing, and you know, the search for truth and all that stuff. But in this case, the truth may be shut down because somebody just doesn't like what somebody has to say.
Well, it's a problem not isolated to campuses, I don't think, but it seems to be in the campus environment, exactly as you say, one that sort of sets people up to be either oversensitive on the one side of, oh, hearing that and it upsets me, and on the other side, sort of oversensitive in that, well, in order to not upset anybody, I'm just not going to say anything. And we shut down all vital communication between people, it seems.
Yeah, and that's another point that I make later on is the fact that, you know, universities have been stuffing their administrations with, you know, diversity counselors and, you know, these types of things. And, you know, it's obviously a good goal. You want people to be comfortable on campus. You want them to have a good learning experience. But the effect is that students are more and more miserable. It's almost, you know, the presence of these diversity counselors is kind of teaching them to be offended and see things through, you know, kind of a lens of grievance rather than, you know, a learning experience. You know, if somebody says something you don't say, then you, back in the day, you used to go up and say, hey, I don't like that you said that, let's talk about it. Whereas now you can run to the administration and complain anonymously to them. And that's another thing. I mean, what you see as I've seen on campuses around America, you basically have disgruntled students that are that don't like the grade that they got in a certain class, and so they'll anonymously report a professor that stood in front of the class, and you know, because they didn't provide a trigger warning if they were going to talk about something, or you know, they misgender a student, they use the wrong pronouns.
Christian, I have to stop you for a moment because I hear this term all the time,
mm-hmm.
and I'm an old guy, so I need clarification. Are you saying that if I were to go to a college lecture today on the UW-Madison campus in political science, someplace where emotions run pretty raw these days, that that it would not be uncommon for me to hear the professor actually, before his remarks, say something to the effect of, I want those of you who might find this material objectionable to know that I'm going to be presenting this? That they really have to put disclaimers in front of credible information they are teaching?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we see, wow. You know, we see a lot of the bias response reports are because a professor, especially like in English class, where a professor is going to talk about a novel that might have like a sexual assault in it or something. If they don't use a trigger warning at the beginning of class, then they'll get reported for sure.
So if they were going to offer their comments on To Kill a Mockingbird in a reading class, and they didn't up front say we're going to be talking about sensitive issues today that deal with this and this and this, they could be reported just because they didn't say that, even though almost every person has at some point in their educational career been exposed to Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes, they will almost certainly be. I don't want to say almost certainly, but I've seen plenty of cases where professors have been reported for not announcing that at the beginning of class.
Wow, I don't know how you would even. And I know the teaching profession gets hard and harder, and I don't even care what the political characterization is. I do worry that, again, much like certain other servant sort of roles in our society, you would have to say, why do I want to put up with this kind of abuse as a professor or as a high school teacher or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, one of the first cases I found was at the University of Florida, where there was a chemistry professor, and he's standing in front of his class, and most of his class failed an exam, and he's like really exasperated with the class, and he says, "Look, you guys are just a waste of space here in this class. If you don't want to take it seriously, then, you know, go take another class or something."
Mm-hmm.
And so he got reported for calling them a waste of space. And a student said it was ableist of him to like mock the cognitive functions of his students or something like that. And then I talked to the guy, and he said, "Well, I didn't even know until I saw your story. I didn't even know that there was a complaint lodged against me. But I was kind of wondering why it was hard for me to find a job." He'd applied for jobs elsewhere, and I don't know if they knew about this report or not.
Are you saying to me that if a complaint gets filed, I'm sure each school has their own individual policy, but that it would not be uncommon for that complaint to wind up on that instructor's personal record or in their personnel file?
It certainly could. And it's a public record. It's especially at public universities. That's how. I think I've done open records of over 50 schools now, and I've gotten over 1,000 cases where, you can just go and ask for them, and it's a matter of public record. So potential employers can check this stuff out themselves.
Wow. I don't – this is another one of those I feel from having read your article, Christian, I'm not sure what to do with this information. Are you?
Well, it seems hard for us to go backwards on this. I mean, some schools will have to say, "Oh, yeah," they would think it was saying, you know, bias and hate is okay on campus if we, you know, if we shut down our websites. But you know, there are a couple lawsuits out there, like the University of Michigan just last October. They shut down their bias website. They're going to reconstitute it and call it something else. But there have been some lawsuits that have been successful in some of these areas, and so we'll see kind of how this winds its way through the courts.
The the First Amendment issue here could even get lost just amongst some of the examples that you provide, and whether people think they had a legitimate complaint or not is somewhat debatable, I suppose. But when you have our education system trying to make judgment calls onto really a matter of intent, did that professor if the professor knew, if back to the beginning story of the story, if the student came into the professor on day one and introduced himself and said, "I am from this culture and whatever, and I'd just like to talk to you a little bit," and so the professor knew that if he made a reference to cows that it was going to be offensive to this student, and then purposely did it anyway, the intent would have been to malign that student or that student's interests, and I would agree that then a complaint probably would be warranted. But when they can be filed in anonymity without any note of intent, to me that ought to be a slam dunk constitutional issue that colleges and people that have political science departments ought to be screaming about.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing I think I see the most with professors are, one, the use of gender pronouns, because let's face it, a lot of professors are a little bit older, and so they're a little bit slow to pick up on things like this for students that are transgender. And so, if a professor will misgender a person in class, then they'll get reported for that. And then the other big one with professors is the use of the N-word. Which
they're not still doing that out of just blatant ignorance, are they? If it's in the context of Tom Sawyer and you're discussing the book, you might have to use that word. I guess you could have tried and avoid it, but it's,
well, right. That's the perfect example. Yeah. I mean, there's a difference between using the word and referring to the word. I don't know of any professor that should keep their job if they used it in directly at a student. I think, actually, the UW is dealing with this right now with the Kobe King basketball situation. I think from what I understand, the weight trainer referred to the word, didn't call a student the word. But mm-hmm. So you have a lot of cases where a professor, like in my article, I mentioned where a professor is, here's what a U.S. senator said. Here's this offensive thing that they said back in the 80s to make a point about what used to be considered normal. But a student, reported that professor for using the word out loud. They weren't calling a student the name. They weren't being offensive. They were just, here's a thing that people used to say. They were referring to it, like you said, as kind of the Mark Twain example, but. So, I mean, pretty much every school has some example of where a professor has referred to the word, but, a student writes, a complaint against them saying, just merely hearing the word is enough to trigger my racial sensitivities, and it's too much. So that's probably the number one complaint against professors.
Well, a lot of this stuff finds its roots in academia for various reasons. It begs the question, which I'm guessing you probably haven't had a chance to look into at all, but it begs the question of, well, wait a minute, these are publicly funded, taxpayer-funded entities in many cases. Obviously, I'm sure these probably also exist at private universities, The UW system is a publicly funded system. Well, how much of a stretch is it to say that all of a sudden that makes its way into governmental bodies, the Madison City Council, the Janesville City Council, a school board, a whatever. If this is going on and schools are deeming it effective, and maybe that's a question for you, is are they deeming it effective? They continue to add them. I'm guessing they are.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mentioned at the end, where, are they effective, or are they just teaching students to always be race conscious, to always be gender conscious of, kind of the grievance culture, victim culture, is everything against me? Am I always being the target of microaggressions? And, you know, there have been studies that show that that tends to drive people apart more than it actually brings them together. You know, the old model was if you hear someone say something offensive, or if you take offense to something, then you go talk to them about it and you work it out. Rather than a situation where you just go anonymously report them to the university. And that's a problem for the university, because the university is promising these students that they can somehow police every utterance on campus, every word that is ever said. And, of course, that's never going to be the case. And so it's just going to lead to disappointment when students do hear things that they disagree with or they find, you know, triggering or whatever.
Part of this is... it seems to me, Christian, is an overall societal shift we've had where the responsibility is not on me as an individual anymore. I can pawn that off for any number of things, not just because I'm offended by someone's speech or someone's whatever. And this idea that now I have complete and total power to, it's a misnomer and it's obviously not true, but I get to control other people. I don't like the way the professor gave that speech. I am going to file a complaint and force him to give that speech in a way that meets my own one individual personal need, regardless of the needs of everybody else in the class. Isn't that what this is ultimately about?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, I hate to blame everything on the internet all the time, but...
Go ahead. I won't disagree with you, even if I could.
I think this is in large part kind of the individualistic, kind of persona everybody's taken on the internet, where everything that I say is sacred. It's a sacred cow.
Yep.
And, And, I can cancel other people. I can shut other people up if I want to. I can shame them online. I can do all this stuff. And so pretty much, whatever I think, my feelings trump everyone else's. And I can kind of cancel other people if I need to. And I think that's kind of what you're seeing here, where you have students and in some cases other professors trying to do that to each other on campus.
Well, It's interesting. It's an interesting read for people if you kind of want to get up with what's going on some campuses. You can find the article on where, Christian?
The article is on at thedispatch.com. And then over at the College Fix, I have probably 20 to 25 more examples of other schools that have examples that are just as crazy as UW-Madison. They're just one of many. So,
all right.
Check it out.
All right, Christian, thanks for the insights. It's always good to know what people outside of your own wheelhouse are thinking sometimes, and appreciate your time this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, take care. Just got a text in that from a listener who said, I just read the article. By the way, we have it linked up on the Facebook post for this segment. There is an incident from a Zumba class that sums up the ridiculousness of this system. What I'm not good at doing is figuring out how to solve things that are as massive as these efforts become when they get installed in, like the school system, the education mechanism across the entire country. How do you affect a change to that when there is no one global system to do that? You can affect the change inside the UW system or, whatever state college system or private school. But to get it to permeate across takes a lot of effort, and to get it this way took a lot of effort. I'm going to go back and find that because...
I just did a control F and pulled up Zumba. It's pretty ridiculous.
The article? Go ahead, Tom. Yeah.
So, November 2018 at a Zumba class at UW-Madison, a female student left her place during the workout and sat down. When the instructor asked her what was wrong, she said she was too hot, so the instructor turned on a large fan at the front of the class. This, however, made several of the women at the front of the class too cold, so they went to turn the fan on. The instructor yelled at them for doing so, which brought charges of racism.
because the girl that left the class was white, and the other three that were saying it was now too cold were of a different ethnicity.
Correct. That's how petty it has become.
And to me, we're all becoming that way.
Fairly often it says in the article that these become hate crimes and they're investigated. That you can have somebody report you for something that you said maybe over a beer at a bar and have an investigator come to your room, your house, your dorm room, wherever it may be, and investigate you for what could be classified as a hate speech.
Well,
how would you like to have that on your record the rest of your life?
If you don't think, gang, that sitting here, I don't have a constant stream of data processing going on in my head as I'm talking, which is sometimes, I believe, the reason for my halted sentences that on occasion I notice when I'm listening back to shows, because I'm trying to be sure that the next word coming out of my mouth is not going to be one that somehow is blatantly offensive. I'm quite certain I've said some things that some people find offensive from time to time, and I'm sorry, I'm a human being, and that's what we do from time to time. But
if people are interested in this type of, this is a great read as to what is happening on not just UW-Madison, but campuses throughout the nation.
Yeah, I mean, UW-Madison is a close example, but yes, this is all across the country. I did not mention the website at UW-Madison, by the way, apparently costs $60,000 a year. And I didn't get into that because I forgot.
And that's okay.
Now, I'm guessing that when it says the site, it says, this is the verbiage in the article. The site began taking reports at the school at a cost of $60,000 per year. My suspicion is that's the budget line. And it has to include some staffing. I mean, if you just had the thing and nobody was reacting to it, nobody was spending time, it would cost you next to nothing. But in order to have a staff person or two look at this when it comes in, read it, write it up, go address it with a professor or a student or do whatever.
That makes sense.
That's probably where it is. In the grand scheme of the UW's budget, probably $60,000 isn't a lot. But you're spending money on stuff that, you know, ultimately used to just be common sense. On occasion, people are going to say stuff that, you know, back in my day, we would have said, on occasion, people are going to say stupid stuff. Ignore it. Move on.
He's an idiot.
You just offended someone.
Yeah.
And that's just it.
I've been called an idiot before. I mean, okay, you're probably right.
And particularly on some topics.
You know, sometimes we dig our feet in on an argument. You know, we're especially guilty of this if you're in an argument with your spouse. Like, you know, I'm digging in. And for whatever reason, then when you're done, it's like, okay, I was a dope. I was an idiot. I'm sorry.
It wasn't anything that was so important that we had to have that big discussion on. But here, I can't imagine. I don't want to make that correlation. See, I'm doing it again. But that's why it is. It does have a chilling effect on speech. It simply does. The entire environment right now has a chilling effect on speech. And the people that want the control ultimately are the people that want that chilling effect, because that only lets one side of the discussion out. I don't think there's anything to be gained, I've said this many times, you know, by us just sitting here calling each other names and, you know, saying whose, you know, past is the darkest or whose future is the darkest. I that doesn't get us anywhere. But the reality is that sometimes you just need to say, well, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I was not being racially charged. I moved the fan. And the idea that someone could even take that and complain about it at all, in my brain, will never compute, no matter how much sensitivity training you give me. And to those of you that are offended by that, I'm sorry. I love y'all. I do. But there comes a point at which you say, be responsible for you. This girl, the first girl in the Zumba story, did not, out of the behest of the fact that she, I'm just making great assumptions. She could have gone straight to the instructor and said, I'm really hot. What can you do? And the instructor could have, she didn't do that. She didn't make a big deal about it at all. She simply got up, left the class, and went and sat down. So as probably, in her mind, not to be disruptive to the rest of the class, because she knew she was one person and the rest of the class was fine. The teacher tries to make an accommodation, the class instructor, and then other people get upset that the accommodation is being made, and then you start to, you know, probably in retrospect, the teacher says, I should never have turned the fan on. Okay, yeah, but if there was anybody else hot that just thought, well, I'm going to deal with it, you can't win. You are in a no-win situation as the leader in that particular situation. And that's a very unfortunate place to put leaders in. And I think that's, quite honestly, I think that's why we're getting crappier and crappier leaders in places everywhere from little tiny committees to the state and federal government. Because you'll only get the people who have basically very little conscience left. So it doesn't bother them.
You know, the whole idea of a liberal arts education was to give you a well-rounded education so you're exposed to all kinds of ideas from all different directions, no matter where they are. Now, according to this article, that's no longer the case, that you are severely limiting a lot of points of view because somebody is going to be triggered because they're a snowflake.
And
which I just triggered a bunch of people.
What's interesting to me, if you look at this, and I try to be very objective in these cases, Tom, I get there are people that are sensitive to certain things. I'm sensitive to certain things. What was I watching? Oh, I finally got to, if Chet's listening in, he'll be very happy. I finally got to one of the movies on the list of movies I'm supposed to watch that everybody gives me. That's like 750 titles long. But I finally got to The Big Short, which is a sort of, I don't know, it's not a documentary, but it's sort of based on the facts of the whole 2008 banking meltdown.
It's a little hard to follow.
It's extraordinarily hard to follow, in my opinion.
The book is much better, for what it's worth.
But there's offensive language in that film, to me, that doesn't do anything for the story.
I agree with that.
It's like it doesn't need to be there. Now, if that's a direct quote from that guy and you're trying to be historically accurate, I guess you got to put it in there. But I think you take so many other freedoms when you present films like that that you could certainly, instead of saying, you know, the big expletive, say darn or what, or what the heck is going on. Or, you know, I mean, you could sub other words and it would be fine, is my point. Anyway, I suppose I could have started a petition against Netflix having that film in its library because I am so triggered by it. You know what? I said, I guess I could have shut the thing off if I was really that offended by it, and I didn't. End of story. Done. Move on.
You know, your question to Christian that lectures now have to be, they have to start them with a trigger warning that I may say some things here that may offend you.
Didn't that used to just go without saying? If you were engaged in conversation with another individual, that you might go, you might have the current, and you go home and you go, I can't believe he said that. And it wasn't, you didn't instantly become their arch enemy.
Or report them on a website. I mean, does this not smack of McCarthyism that we're going to report these people?
This smacks of very bad times in world history, where a group of people established and found a way to gain all of the control and shut out any dissenting voices, China. Coronavirus. Did you hear the difference in the reporting this morning? World Health Organization thinks there's something, whatever, but they were hundreds of thousands of cases apart, what China is reporting and what WHO thinks is actually out there. Why? China's stifling it. Most everybody has suggested that they're manipulating the numbers. Or at the very worst, they just simply don't have the ability to test it all, so they don't even have the right numbers. They're just reporting wrong numbers. It doesn't matter to me. But that's what happens when you have these things coming. And if you don't think that, why would this be installed there? See, now I'm going off on a tangent. One person, it's not installed so that 53% of the class goes and complains about a professor and the professor gets a review and a talking to. It's installed so that one person in the class has the power of the other 138. And people say that's equal. That's not equal. That's one person having 138 votes. That's not equal at all.
And it only takes that one voice anymore. That's,
so if the intent was, well, this person is in the minority because the other 137 aren't offended by it, but he is and he should be recognized that he is, fine. I'm very sorry you were offended, young man. I'll try to be a little more careful in future lectures.
Yeah.
End of story, done. But not today. I don't know.
Pull your pants up, kid. You know, get on with life. Life is hard at times.
We didn't even take the break, did we? Because I get off on a tangent sometimes. I apologize. All right. Edmund Halabi is in here next, by the way. We're going to tackle some local issues and look at business. Not giant corporate business. Business. What do we want in this? If you just want the Walmarts and the whoever's, you know, the Costco's and the to run the world, and you don't want anybody else involved in the process, fine. Then you can probably tune out. If you're an advocate of our system in this country and the fact that anybody can start a business and succeed with the right amount of education and drive, you're going to want to be here for the next segment. Edmund Halabi is next after this time out on your talk show on WCLO Janesville Beloit.
The time to buy is now at Burtness Chevrolet. It's Chicago Auto Show Week, and that means huge deals on Chevy's top lineup. Hi, Brian Bowditch for Burtness Chevrolet in Orfordville and Whitewater, and we are ready to save you money.
All right, you've got my attention, Brian. What sort of big auto show deals are we talking about here?
Auto show bonus cash is $1,000 on Silverado half-ton truck and Blazer, and $500 on the Malibu. This is on top of all current incentives.
That is big.
Yes, that means with current incentives and discounts, you can save up to $10,000 on a Silverado half ton.
Wait, hold on a sec. I can save up to 10 grand on a new Silverado?
You got it.
All right, so what if I'm a GM cardholder?
GM cardholders earn $1,000 bonus on top of all incentives.
Well, I know where I'm going to be this week.
Auto show time means big savings at Burtness Chevrolet. When the products are similar, it's the dealer that makes the difference. Shop Burtness Chevrolet, Orfordville, and Whitewater. Chevrolet, find new roads.
Residency restrictions apply.
It's a new year, and Mercy Health wants you to see 2020 in 2020. The Vision Centers at Mercy Health East and the Mercy Health Mall in Janesville offer comprehensive eye exams for all ages, contact lens evaluations and fittings, specialty and designer eyewear, and hundreds of frames to choose from. Make your appointment at Mercy Health East or the Mercy Health Mall today so you can see clearly this year. Mercy Health, a passion for making lives better.
The traditional flowers, cards, and chocolate are fine, but when it comes to real gifts, the gifts that make the heart sing? Professional auto detailing and custom auto accessories is where it's at. From window tint to auto start, truck bed liners, and rust proofing, a gift certificate from 815 Custom Auto will make their heart sing.
Yeah!
Okay, maybe we don't need them to actually sing, but the real love is in a gift certificate from 815 Custom Auto, South Park Avenue, South Beloit, and at 815customauto.com.
50-50 Fridays.
This Friday, get $50 worth of gift certificates to Newt's in Orfordville for only $25. Newt's isn't your ordinary Wisconsin fish fry. They have golden fried walleye, bluegill, cod, catfish, and jumbo shrimp. Stop by Thursdays for wing night. If it's a steak you love, come to Newt's on Saturdays for the prime rib buffet. Chef-carved prime rib, ribs, chicken, shrimp, salad, soup, and dessert bar. From pizza to burgers, the menu at Newt's has it all. And Valentine's Day may be on a Friday this year. dessert, but Newt's is celebrating Friday and Saturday. Order off their special Valentine's menu, including prime rib and lobster for $27.95, a 14-ounce New York strip steak for $16.95, a full pound of king crab for only $35.95, and loads more. Plus, all ladies will receive a beautiful carnation. Reservations always accepted. Now you know where to go for Valentine's weekend. Get $50 worth of gift certificates to Newt's in Orfordville for only $25 with 50-50 Fridays from WCLO.com.
The traditional flowers, cards, and chocolate are fine, but when it comes to real gifts, the gifts that make the heart sing? Professional auto detailing and custom auto accessories is where it's at. From window tint to auto start, truck bed liners, and rust proofing, a gift certificate from 815 Custom Auto will make their heart sing.
Yeah!
Okay, maybe we don't need them to actually sing, but the real love is in a gift certificate from 815 Custom Auto, South Park Avenue, South Beloit, and at 815customauto.com.
The popular school choice programs in Wisconsin allow students to attend private and religious schools tuition-free. Applications are being accepted now through April 16th. Take action today to ensure your child begins the 2020 and 21 school year in the best school possible. To get details on the program and local participating private schools, visit www.chooseyourschoolwi.org. Again, visit choose.